Welcome to The Vinyl Exam. I'm your host, Keith, and this is episode 156. Kiss is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They've sold tens of millions of records worldwide, toured the world successfully, and created a legion of the most diehard fans there are, including me. Most fans agree their best music is on their first six studio albums and two live albums. After the tour for the sixth studio album, the band found themselves at the height of their popularity. They then took a series of actions and reactions to their fans' reactions that served as the nadir of their popularity. It's this period of popularity, however, that I believe creates their most interesting music. And that's what I want to dig into, at least a little bit, this episode. I want to play the music from some of these albums, which to me in many real ways are stigmatized by being associated with Kiss. And there's some interesting music that I think is worth checking out. In 1978, Kiss was at the height of their popularity. Their studio albums sold roughly 2 million copies per release, and they were one of the biggest bands in the world. A few of their members, mainly Ace and Peter, felt they were the reason for their popularity, so the band got an idea. They would record four solo albums, each created by one of the band members, and release them all on the same day. Now, Gene's, it sounded a lot like Kiss and was solid front to back. Paul's, most people agree, sounded the most like Kiss, but to me had a few hit-and-miss moments. Peter's sounded nothing like Kiss and was on the whole rather terrible. Ace's record? Ace's record sounded somewhat like Kiss as well, but was immediately the best-received record. It was solid, adventurous, delirious, and interesting. Now, given all that, what do you think Kiss's record sales were of these albums? They were banking on each of them selling close to a million, but they ended up combining for 2 million, roughly the same as a standard Kiss album. The oversaturation experiment failed. It wasn't the only experiment of theirs that would fail, either. Now, something Kiss themselves have made no secret of, in the time since, the band toured extensively supporting those first six albums. After all those tours, which really served as one multi-year-long mega-tour, they had grown a bit sick of each other. In addition to the other things that triggered the solo albums, this tour and this closeness and this desire to kind of break free and have everybody do their own thing was something that at least Paul and Gene, who were the brains behind Kiss for, you know, most if not all of the career, agreed would be good to keep things fresh and kind of mix things up. Now, the band didn't tour behind their solo albums. What they did do was record another album, Dynasty, and then go on a tour after that. On that album, Dynasty, was one of Kiss's biggest hits, I Was Made for Lovin' You, a rock-disco hybrid that almost went top 10 on the Billboard singles chart. It was a huge hit, but came at a price. Since disco was viewed as an enemy of rock music, Kiss was perceived as selling out. To Paul, who wrote it, it was a natural extension of his days spent at Studio 54. No, really, he went there and danced a whole bunch. As longtime manager Bill O'Coin told it, the label, Casablanca, was a disco label. Disco was huge and they wanted a disco song. The rest of the album is not particularly disco, but it's remembered as such because of the lead single. The song playing now, Dirty Livin', is particularly reviled as well, although I'm not sure why. As a rock song, I'm not sure if this works, but as a funk rock disco hybrid, I think it does. The song is representative of the chances the band took buried deeper on their albums of this period. Now, the ensuing Dynasty tour was a mixed bag. Some shows sold out, and some got canceled, but the band was confronted with a legion of new young fans and the migration of diehards away from the band. Their answer to this was to write the catchiest record they could, in essence, their pop record. I find this next record, Unmasked, fascinating to this day. It serves as a window into what Kiss thought was pop music. Many of the songs were with an ear toward being hits. In a way, they were right. The song Shandy on the record was big enough in Australia to smash Australia's pop charts and warrant a tour. Other songs like Tomorrow are catchy as hell and could have been hits if they weren't associated with Kiss. I suppose we'll never know. But the record Unmasked is worthwhile, and arguably the most accessible record to non-Kiss fans there is. That said, yet again, Kiss had calculated their fan base incorrectly and misunderstood what their audience wanted. Unmasked did okay commercially in the US, but paled compared to previous records. Their next move would prove to be the strangest and most divisive in their history. I never said I was more than I am. Leading up to their next record, the band had touted that this was going to be the heaviest Kiss record yet, in essence a return to the heavy roots Kiss from the mid-70s. But instead of delivering this heavy Kiss record as they had promised, Kiss released a concept record, Music from the Elder. Paul Stanley refers to this record as the Show the World Your Geniuses record, and the band seems to have genuinely liked it when it came out, only to have it greeted with incredibly bad reviews. In addition, what was left of their fan base hated this record. I actually hated the record myself until about a month before recording this, but for whatever reason, I came around to it recently. It's another incredibly interesting record with genuinely cool songs on it. They just aren't in the vein of what people expected from classic Kiss. It suffered from being associated with Kiss, and probably still continues to be, but as a standalone record without knowledge of who made it, I think it's really interesting. The next record, Creatures of the Night, was musically a return to the glory days of Kiss, but very few fans bought it. It was a low-selling record for a very long time. Its lack of success led to the band's next move: complete the lineup change that Creatures necessitated and take off their makeup. Creatures of the Night was their sales nadir, but their return to glory, meaning more conventionally sounding Kiss, was right around the corner. In many ways, the band returned, quote, to form with Creatures and never looked back, thus closing their least successful but most interesting era from 1978 to 1981, when they tried almost everything and very little of it worked. Now, this is about as light a skimming of the surface as I can possibly do when it comes to this era of Kiss. This was very condensed in terms of its summary, and you know, only a few snippets got played. But if you are interested, then I encourage you to check it out. Again, it's not what you think of when you think of Kiss. It wasn't what Kiss's fans thought of when they thought of Kiss, which is why, in my opinion, the sales were so weak on many of these records. Because it's associated with Kiss, I wanted to include a little bit of a bonus here, and I wanted to read an excerpt of an essay that's going to be on our first liner notes ebook. Now, while everyone has access to liner notes, in terms of the ebook, that's something that we give to our Patreons. So if you're interested in becoming a Patreon, go head over to the Vinyl Exam Patreon page. But now let's do a quick excerpt. Kiss's best album is their debut, Kiss. I determined this in a series of blog posts entitled The Scientific Method Meets Kiss, now long since lost to time. I listened to every Kiss album over a 3-day period, my hypothesis being Creatures of the Night is actually the best Kiss album. After listening through their discography, I decided 1. It's actually not. 2. Kiss is. 3. Unmasked is actually kind of awesome. 4. The production on Dressed to Kill is awful and weak-sounding. 5. Almost everything after Animalize is pretty bad. 6. Dynasty sounds great to me, and I will fight you on this if I have to. And 7. Carnival of Souls is refreshing and vibrant, and I am perhaps one of 6 people on the planet that believe this. Creatures of the Night is probably the most metal album of their discography, but Kiss is awesome and jam-packed with incredible songs that hold a lot of appeal for non-Kiss fans. I mention this because it's not normal for bands to release their best album first. Many bands take a while to find their sound, and in my experience, the magic album is usually number 2 or 3. While Kiss refined their sound over time, they made their biggest impact on the first release. This is oddly similar to another favorite band of mine, the Wu-Tang Clan, who set an impossibly high standard on their debut Enter the Wu-Tang and never came close to it again. Kiss's popularity was far from its peak after the debut came out. In fact, few people cared about it at all, but the template was set. makeup, pyrotechnics, a massive cult following, but little in terms of hit songs. Lather, rinse, repeat. An arguable reason Creatures of the Night is the most metallic Kiss album is because of Vinnie Vincent's guitar playing. While Ace Frehley is credited for guitar on the record, it's actually Vinnie on everything. Now, since I was 11, I couldn't recall noticing a difference at the time. Searing leads and chunky riffs just made the record heavier, and this continued on the next record, Lick It Up, with Vincent in full view for the first time. Somewhere around Music from the Elder, Kiss receded into the pack as far as bands I obsessed over. I was now all about rap music and Shout at the Devil era Motley Crue. So when I first saw the video for Lick It Up, I remember thinking, in this order, wait, is that Kiss? That one guy definitely looks like Paul Stanley. Damn, Gene Simmons should have kept the makeup on. Who the hell is that skinny guy? Thanks, as always, for checking us out on the Vinyl Exam. As a reminder, there's more Vinyl Exam out there. You can go to the website, www.thevinylexam.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and of course we're on Patreon, which we just talked about a little bit ago. Speaking of Patreon, thanks to our official Vinyl Examiners, Brian Siebold and Yan Wong, and of course our executive producers, Janine Cuevas, Austell Gray, and Ben Lack. We'll catch you next time.